Welcome, everyone, to Ontology Summit 2010, Creating the Ontologists of the Future. Today, January 14, 2010, we have the second panel session, Training Content for the Future Ontologists. So Leo and I have assembled together a rough set of notes, the straw man's proposal. So the plan for today is I thought we would just briefly go through that, review it with everyone. Hopefully everyone's read it now. Then the panel, Barry Smith, Chris Menzel, Pierre Gunnar, and Aldo Gangemi will be give some of their comments. Robert Stevens was not able to make it in person, but he sent me some of his comments in an email, and I'll relate those at the end. And then we'll just open it up for a wide-open discussion. Just a few questions for people to kind of keep in their minds as through. We want to identify, first of all, what topics are potentially missing, which topics need either more or less emphasis, and the final question is how detailed should this really be? Now, we had kind of assembled this list of topics together with the ultimate objective of creating a common system for ontology training. And the reason it was called What's in the Brain of an Ontologist is that this is kind of the sum total of all ontology-related knowledge that we want to be able to capture. Later panels, later sessions, we'll kind of divide these up into particular programs or modules, whatever concept is used there. But the objective for today is to really come up with, again, the sum total content that any ontologist in their application really needs to know. Leo, did you have any other comments?
No, I think that's a pretty concise summary.
Okay, so we move down to the straw man proposal. 26HW is the link on the conference call page. First, we wanted to be able to kind of identify some, what are the basic formal foundations, this kind of background knowledge that an ontologist needs to know. And this ontology being kind of a multidisciplinary adventure, there are a number of disciplines that would be at this level of the formal foundation. So it's a basic understanding of some concepts from mathematics, computer science, such as set theory, some formal languages, data models. From logic, there would be the understanding of formal logic with its syntax and semantics. Semantics from the perspective also on the philosophical side, the philosophy of language, formal semantics perhaps from the linguistic side. And then finally, some of the basics of formal ontology. The basic understanding of, what are these fundamental ontological distinctions? Essentially being able to understand correctly at least what is us, for example. The notion of subclassing and instance of would be very fundamental topics in that area. The second kind of major component here has to do with the languages, the knowledge representation languages with which people specify ontologies. And so this kind of arcs into the ontology spectrum that we've discussed in the earlier meeting. So on the one end, including common logic, first-order logic, and then moving all the way across the semantic web stack, RDF, OWL, description logic, various rule-based efforts within W3C, and also languages such as SCOS. Although SCOS is maybe more appropriately considered to be a in RDF, but we can discuss that later as well. And so these are, again, the languages that people would be using to specify their ontology. The third component would be dealing with automated reasoning. Some of the major applications of ontologies are really kind of exploiting the fact that these knowledge representation languages have in model theory and proof theory, and hence in their implementations, they can support some degree of automated reasoning. I think pretty well every one of the languages in that previous section has various SIR approvers and query processing mechanisms available. And then moving down to ontological engineering. So here we're looking at the kind of underlying discipline of the ontology life cycle. So this would include knowledge and experience of various design methodologies, different kinds of ontology analysis, for example, ontoclean. The understanding of ontology mapping and the relationships between ontologies, which would then lead to an understanding of ontology repositories, how they're structured, what repositories out there, how do they work, how can you build, how can you work with them. And then finally, the notion of computer-assisted ontological engineering, kind of a analogous to computer-assisted software engineering. And so kind of experience with some basic software tools that people building ontologies pretty well need to be familiar with in order to actually work with ontologies perspective. The next step, would be the kind of, we felt that an ontologist should really be familiar with widely used ontologies, as well as ontologies that have either been proposed as international standards or adopted at least as part of international standards. And, I mean, depending on the ultimate application that ontologists would be working in, these would be, you know, some would be over others. But to be able to have a kind of a broad understanding, some familiarity with these different ontologies would really, you know, give an ontologist kind of a broad background with which to design new ontologies. You can also kind of put these, there's two ways of kind of slicing up these existing ontologies. You could do it by application domain or, again, along the ontology spectrum. You know, WordNet and folksonomies, taxonomies, TopMaps, Dublin Core, kind of over on the informal side of the spectrum. The foundational upper ontologies more over on the more formal side of the spectrum. Things like time ontologies, mirror topologies, semantic web services, they're actually different ontologies that are specified in different knowledge representation languages. So, for example, time ontologies, there's a catalog of temporal theories, which is common logic, but there's also OWL time, OWL, and similar with semantic web services. And then finally, there's this notion of applications of ontologies. Now, whether this is applications is the right word, whether to call them domains, or whether to call these really uses of ontologies, I think that's one thing we can discuss today. But there would be a kind of a, perhaps, best to approach a lot of the ontology work and some of these skills, perhaps depending on the end application that ontologists would be potentially working towards, so whether that's bioinformatics, semantic web technologies, kind of semantic integration within enterprises, e-commerce, information retrieval, and computational linguistics. So that kind of just is a brief run-through of the straw man. Leo, any comments?
I think this is pretty complete, at least on the initial path. So I think we just need to have the panelists talk.
Okay. Sorry, I just unmuted myself. This is correct. I can't help but notice, and maybe I missed, but evaluation of ontologies isn't here anywhere.
I think we can discuss that when we get to the level of detail, the granularity. Kind of being combined into ontology analysis techniques, I guess.
Okay. I'll mute myself again.
Yeah, but we'll, that was the topic of discussion.
Okay.
Just again, say the panelists have prepared a few comments, and we can begin with Barry. Because I think Barry had to leave us too. Are you still there, Barry, or did you have to leave?
Can you hear me, Michael?
Yeah.
Good. Everything I say is predicated on the idea that the ultimate result of our work will do full justice to the idea that ontology is essentially multidisciplinary. And the disciplines involved will include computer science, but I think that they will involve also information science, disciplines relating to information management in a very practical sense, but then the scientific areas where ontology is being successfully applied, such as biology and medicine. And if we view this goal in this essentially cross-disciplinary or multidisciplinary way, then the first thing that strikes one with the straw man proposal is that it was put together by computer scientists. And it has a very heavy computer science emphasis. Most of the people I know who are working in the oncology area are not computer scientists and would need to know, I think, only a small fraction of what is listed here. That means that since we're aiming here to get a longish list of everything that an oncologist might want to know, then the issue is to detect gaps in this list, which come from the computer science emphasis. And the first gap has already been identified by Joanna, which is ontology evaluation. The ontology evaluation can be used to illustrate the problems with the computer science approach. In my experience, when the scientists try to evaluate ontologists, then they build over-evident algebraic systems which don't actually conform with the real-world ontology landscape and with the real needs of ontology evaluators who are doing real work. And that's a common theme for the remaining 3.5 minutes of what I want to say. What the big areas that are missing here all have to do with human beings. The first area would be the role of human beings in building ontology. The good ontologies were built manually. I still know of no good ontology, no even half good ontology, which was built by any kind of automatic process. So we need a large section about human manual ontology building techniques. The next area we need is a question on the human role in coordinating ontology development. Ontology is designed to try and break down silos in a complex information domain. Then the ontologies we create should not introduce new silos. Don't work well together. Half issue there is a formal computational issue. Part of it is a human issue. The ontologies need to be built by humans in such a way that the human system can use them collaboratively rather than use them to create new problems. And that's with ontology disasters, catastrophes, errors, traps, and so forth. All of the things that are listed here are things which are nicely neutral, nearly all of them. What we need is a current acquaintance with those ontology efforts which failed and which continue to fail. And we need, therefore, to have a list of reasons why they fail, a list of ontology errors. And we need to train people in how to avoid those errors. Most importantly, and this is my final point, I think one of the reasons for errors and catastrophes, and one of the reasons why I'm so keen on the idea that we should create this standard curriculum or certification code, is because not only is ontology not necessary, it's also subject to distinct disciplinary terminology, which overlap from the point of view of syntax, but which mean very distinct when viewed from the point of view of semantics. Therefore, any reasonable training program for ontologists should include as a compulsory component a module devoted to ontology terminology, which attention is paid to the fact that words like class and system, for instance, are used in different ways by different communities. And many of our errors arise because people start building ontologies. They think they know what the word class means, for instance. They work with other people who are happily using that word, but they're not using it in the same way, and so confusion results. And that's my
Thank you very much, Barry. Those are excellent points. yeah, definitely guilty as charged, being a computer scientist. But yeah, so this is a really good point. I guess part of hopefully the rest of our discussion, I'm sure these will kind of reappear. I had the feeling that they would. So I guess at some point we're going to have to try to figure out how to kind of incorporate these ideas into what we're with us. I think what we'll probably have to do is have a more of a kind of a extended kind of little paragraph for each of what's currently just a lot in some of these other aspects, particularly with oncology evaluation and the relationship between the role of humans in building ontologies and what's meant by design methodology. So I think we'll try to expand some of these points to capture evidence perspectives. Okay, so next up, we have Chris Menzel.
Okay, can you hear me? Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay, good. Yeah, I thought Barry's points were excellent for supplementing the straw man, but I will nonetheless focus on the formal end of things. Barry, of course, would agree that what was required is supplementation, that the formal stuff isn't equally important. I mean, I view the formal foundations in the idea of an ontology education along the lines of studying the calculus or linear algebra when you're learning to be an engineer. And moreover, I view it as just as vital, though it's not necessarily the case that everyone will have to be as skilled or proficient as everyone else, and there's probably more roles, more non-technical roles that can be played by people than in, say, mechanical or electrical engineering. At any rate, I don't have a whole bunch to add. I think the formal foundations you've listed are largely right. I would suggest introducing computability theory as a specific topic that probably should be there. Suggest that first-order logic and common logic really be moved out of the knowledge representation languages, because unlike the others in the list there, neither first-order logic and somewhat more generally common logic has a specific syntax, right? You don't have to write it in a certain way. There are going to be certain constraints, but common logic in particular it has, and by design, has no specified concrete syntax. It's just got a very abstract syntax that can be, as most people know, can be realized in many, many different ways. And I guess that connects with the last or second to last thing I would want to mention, and that's, I think, the study of integration generally. I didn't really see, again, unless I missed it, I didn't really see any specific mention of integration. Is it there anywhere?
It's not emphasized as much as it probably should be. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just such a big problem, and I mean, there's in a sense, maybe it'd be premature to put it there, because nobody's really clear what it means, or when they do get a fairly clear idea how to solve the problem. But at any rate, the whole part, so much of the motivation, especially early on with ontologies, was to provide to attack the problem of integrating disparate disparate knowledge bases and databases that it seems a little odd that it's not sort of on the list there. I mean, it's sort of central to the vision, I think, or at least one vision of the semantic web, ultimately. So, and of course, it's got both theoretical components. The issue of integration has theoretical components. There's just the whole issue of, you know, how to move information from a framework where one language is used into a framework where another language is used. And there are, of course, huge practical issues involved as well. So I would suggest that sort of a gap that should be addressed somehow in the proposal as it is. I'll just stop there.
Yeah, that last point, I think other people have sort of made similar comments that instead of having application domains, or perhaps in addition to having application domains, to really talk about uses of ontology. And
right.
So integration would be one big use. Search, ontology-based search would be another big use.
Right.
Decision support systems and kind of other related ideas, but kind of focusing on the use as opposed to domain might be more appropriate.
Chris, and I also wonder about removing first-order logic and common logic from knowledge representation languages. I know that they're both ultimately families of languages, but we're not really focusing on whether it's one specific language.
Right.
But, it could be, in fact, a family of languages.
Right. It might be more appropriate to put, CLIF and CGIF there, though, as concrete instances of common logic. And in particular, it seems a bit, it's maybe a redundant or confusing with if people see logic, formal logic up in formal foundations and first order logic and knowledge representation languages. So there's either some duplication or some slight, inconsistency there that at least might be fixed.
Right. So I would suggest, we have some concrete instances.
Yeah.
The first order logic should just be in the first in the formal foundation.
I agree. And actually, like another way of saying it, which I should have done, is to have the logical language. So first order logic, description logic, etc. That are kind of the more conceptual side.
Right.
Versus the ones that are the computer interpretable ones, which would be CLIF, OWL, RDF, Swirl.
I think that's exactly right.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, thank you very much. Next up, Pierre Grenot.
Yes, hi.
Yes.
Okay, that's good. So I will follow up in the steps of Barry with some complaints and something is missing. I'm not going to be too focused on the formal aspect. This is because I find the list mostly exhaustive of how people represent ontology. It could be a list in a call for paper, for instance. Certainly, it's a list of things which are all relevant to ontologies and which are also all interesting to ontologies. But I'm not sure that the overall picture forms ontology, not that in itself it forms even a part of ontology. The main reason for this is that I think that missing is... I'll be minimalist today and... a bit extremist. I would say that the most important part in ontology is the informal part. And this is what's missing in this picture. There is some suggestion of it in the methodology paragraph, but overall it's rather in the background. And this is because ontology is not concerned with just a formal artifact. It's concerned with reality itself. Okay, so I will expand on this. But, just three or four more comments on the proposal itself. So something I find a bit tangential in this tangential to ontology for various reasons. Some specific things like wordness, for instance. To me, it doesn't count as an ontology. So I'm not too sure why an ontology should worry too much about wordness. It should know about wordness, it should know that it exists, but I'm too sure it's something that should be studied in an ontology course. Also, at the tentative curriculum for an ontology, there is just too much, right? Too much for a single ontology. Maybe there are ontologies who know about all of this. I'm sure that I don't know about half of what's in this list. So it's a bit loaded, okay? Mm-hmm. Especially the formal part that mentions that theory, category theory, formal languages. Formal languages are very important. I'm not too sure how much computer science or informatics you need to know at the starting point, okay? So another thing that disturbs me is this exhaustive list of ontologies. It's very important for ontologies to know about existing ontologies, to look at them, to be able to evaluate them, to know what's good, what's bad, and that the problems are some very bad ontologies out there, and it's not the best pedagogical approach to force into the brain of the future ontologist the whole extent of existing ontology, in my opinion. Okay? And I would not emphasize too much in the beginning of an ontology curriculum the specific languages or the specific tools, because ideally those languages and tools will evolve. There will be new languages, new tools, better ones, and the ontologies should primarily be in a position to learn new languages and new tools. Okay? So those are the comments on that first proposal. Let me be a bit more constructive. And all those comments are given from the perspective of what I call the core ontology. Core ontology is bringing knowledge about the world, about reality, to machines. And there are three poles in this picture of ontology. There is first reality and knowledge, which means theory, which can be formalized, and the machine encoding. And this maps pretty well to fields of knowledge and academic fields. Reality maps pretty well to philosophy and metaphysics, theory to logic, mathematical logic and philosophical logic, and machine encoding to computer science, with knowledge representation and reasoning. All of those probably cover advisories of detail, all the list here. But the point is that there is a continuum in the activity of the ontology. Okay? It goes from reality to the machine through theorization. And also, this doesn't prevent the fact that there could be specialism in ontology. So some ontologies could be more tainted with metaphysics, some ontologies could be more tainted with logic, and some ontologies could be more tainted with computer science. Okay? So that allows deepening the curriculum, the initial curriculum. And this ties to the point that Barry made about the ontology being interdisciplinary. So, in the end, ontology, as thought, is certainly better than the core ontology because ontologies are embedded in applications and systems, and they relate to other disciplines and to other artifacts in this system. So wordnet may not be an ontology, but ontologies may relate to wordnet, and this is desirable. This is true that the ontologist needs to know about. So I'm not sure how it is possible to design a curriculum for ontology and ontology for engineering. Probably it would be some interdisciplinary, interdepartmental program in which you have all the basic components which are represented, which means a bit of metaphysics, a bit of logic, a bit of computer science, and then as you progress, because imagine that we have to think in terms of levels and progression in the curriculum, as you progress, you could deepen your expertise in some field or another, so more towards philosophy or more towards formal foundation or more towards application. Okay? And I believe that I will stop speaking on this one.
Oh, thank you, Pierre. Excellent point. Yeah, just a few kind of few words in response before we move to the next panelist. So just to remind everyone that this set of notes here is really only just the thing to get started. So the whole objective between now and the face-to-face in March will really be to have people contribute ideas on the wiki. The kind of the version 0.1 idea, and as you know, the days between now and March, for people to add more and more points, elaborating points. And so, when Pierre says informal aspects are missing, I think Pierre, I think you speak for a sizable group of people online today, and so I'd encourage everyone who feel that these like informal aspects are missing to augment the current set of notes with the ideas that you would really need, you would want to see. The second point, I guess, is the pedagogical one. Yeah, definitely, I would look at this as being the maximum amount of knowledge that an ontologist would have. Future panels will hopefully kind of divide this up into what would be appropriate for a single course at a university versus a single professional course versus a program at a university, where maybe each of these are done into a particular, each sum of topics becomes its own separate course. Although, to be honest, I actually cover about three quarters of this stuff in one semester, in a fourth year course. That was my other personal bias. And then another, point. Oh, no, but that's wrong. I'll say that for later. Thanks very much, Pierre. Really like those comments. Leo, any?
I think Pierre had some good comments. I just want to underscore that, as Michael said, this is really just the initial straw man, and we invite everyone to, you know, add to the wiki as it evolves towards the face-to-face in March. There may be other gaps that that are present here. For example, under ontology, under formal foundations, perhaps people should know a little bit about epistemology, right? We haven't mentioned that. Because we didn't want to really get too deep into philosophy, but that's the notion that comes from what's the distinction between, ontology and ways of knowing or believing. And that's a common error in my experience, that people want to conflate the two, ontology and epistemology. So that's about all.
And then also another point for when people are going to be adding points to the on the wiki. I think some of these, just to be brief, some of these were fairly, short, kind of descriptions, like say ontology, or informal ontology. I think ultimately every one of these kind of bullet points should have a little mini abstract, similar to a description you find in course catalogs. So, for example, under semantic or under logic, formal logic, what would some topics be that would be covered there? Under a formal ontology, what would some of the topics be that would be covered there? So I think that's something we'll want to elaborate as well. Even with the material that's on here already, I think each of these bullet points needs to be elaborated to that next level.
Yes, if you know, this ontology bullet under formal foundation is a bit disturbing.
I think that was similar to what Harry was saying I took it as being similar to what Harry was saying in terms of what are the kind of the fundamental concepts in ontology dealing with the distinction between class and instance.
Yeah.
A lot of, because that's the source of a lot of common ontology.
If you permit, I think for the ontology, those concepts span the whole philosophy, logic, and the computer science spectrum. There are different perspectives to take on these concepts, which have to be taken together, discussed together. So it's hard if you want, your list is a bit orthogonal to this whole ontology and so far you cover. I'm stopping. Sorry.
No, I see what you mean. Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Okay, is Aldo on? I don't see him on the chat. Okay, well, if Aldo's not on, I will just briefly relate some comments that Robert Stevens emailed since he was not able to make it today. He was saying that we have application domains, but not the uses of ontology. For example, as a reference indicating, a reference indexing, querying, schema, etc. So that relates to some of the points that Chris Legel made. One might also add using ontology within software, how to do it and what can be done. And I believe I saw a few comments on the chat room. I haven't been able to type in the chat room. They've been preoccupied. But I believe there are some comments within the chat room dealing with the relationship between ontologies and software engineering. Robert also says we should also be including knowledge elicitation techniques. Definitely, I think some of the methodological points in the straw man proposal we could collaborate to include ideas like knowledge elicitation, ontology evaluation. Finally, he says, there's also the range of things people call ontology and how they fit into the application side of things. Is my ontology a true account of reality, or is it intended to do some cataloging or classification of data? So again, this probably harkens back to the idea of having a little more explicit discussion of the uses of ontology. Okay, so that kind of concludes. Oh, sorry. Is there a comment? So that kind of concludes the sort of panelist portion of the program today. This wasn't a traditional panel as we've had in the past, where we have kind of longer presentations. The point of the panelists was kind of to get the ball rolling, kind of have some prepared comments, although everyone, I guess, would have prepared by reading the experiment beforehand. So I think what we can do is just open it up now to the entire group. And I see hands popping up. Fabian.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Well, I'm looking at this list also as being part of one of the chairs of the other track, which is supposed to come up with schedule for a course. And I think Pierre made the comment that this is a very long list. I personally don't think that I might not have covered all of the things on this list. Did you think about the some way of prioritizing this list?
What we considered was this is a general list, and depending upon kind of the course or the modules that you might address these in abbreviated fashion or in some detail, depending upon. Let's say if you're providing an academic background to the ontologist as opposed to the professional, certified ontologist. So we understand that this is pretty wide, but we thought we'd cast a wide net first to make sure that we had at least the breadth of technical areas that every reasonable person might consider as background training for an ontologist. Obviously, you can't go into a lot of detail.
I agree. We need to cast a wide net. It's just it would be great if we could also maybe people who comment could also maybe indicate when they think something needs to be essential or is essential, and other things that I probably don't think is essential. The second comment I wanted to make is that I see the difficulty that there's a big difference between looking at an ontology artifact, staring at the axioms, and understanding the philosophical motivations behind it. So, for example, to take yours as an example, I can stare at the axioms for a very, very long time without understanding the intended ontology really behind it. And in PSL is maybe a particularly good example, because at least some of the design choices seem to be motivated by the underlying mathematical structure. Mm-hmm. So there you have actually two motivations. First of all, you have a philosophical motivation. What is the process? What is what philosophers or other people found out about processes and events, and then there is the mathematical motivation which led to particular choices as well, and it seems to me maybe even more important than having knowing a list of important ontologies is to understand why the ontologies were designed the way they were designed. I mean, in a few cases that's not doable, like the gene ontology. Of course, each of the things which are in there represents a scientific result that you would only understand if you understand biology behind it. So you can't do that in any detail. But in other cases, like Mayo topology, just looking at a list of five different Mayo topologies doesn't tell you much. If you want to understand them, you need to understand the philosophical debate which motivated the development of the various Mayo topologies. So I think that's an important, maybe that also relates to what Pierre says. There is this informal aspect of ontology which is feeds into creating ontology artifact, but the informal part is to be linked to the artifact if people really want to learn and understand the ontology.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, and it's almost kind of related to the idea, the question of if you look at ontology artifacts, specific ontologies, as being case studies, what's the appropriate way to present an ontology case study? Whether it's a particular ontology, so like you said, to not only to discuss the actual logical content, but the underlying philosophical position, the original design motivations, also the applications that it has. So what would it mean to really understand a particular set of ontologies in a particular domain?
Fabian, this is Leo. I unfortunately dropped. Did you catch anything that I said?
Yes, I think I caught at least most of it. And I
okay,
agree.
Good. Thank you.
So probably the best thing, from what you, I agree with you, what you just said, Michael. Maybe that's the best way of teaching, or a very good way of teaching it, taking a good ontology and explaining it from the philosophical angle, looking at the logical consequences, looking how it solves it, looking maybe at underlying mathematical models that are used in order to prove things about the ontology, and then also see how that particular ontology is used in the context of, I don't know, search or some other application to solve a practical problem.
Yeah. And this was very influenced by, I kind of took more of a biased approach, I guess. So when I'm teaching, different topics in this ontology course, the modern course, when it comes to OWL, it's kind of a key language for OWL or what OWL is about, I don't use the wine ontology. I'll use OWL Time or OWLS. Like real ontologies written in OWL or even good relations, to kind of say, well, here is a real ontology, here's the context of this, and then here's what the OWL code looks like, so people kind of learn the language by example. So that's kind of another way of looking at using existing ontologies. Okay, Giancarlo?
Can you hear me?
Yes, a little thing. I can hear you.
Okay. Hello everyone, I'll try to, since I'm a computer scientist, I'll try to organize my discussion from an engineering perspective, making an analogy to database engineering and software engineering. In the way that three standards in software engineering and other areas, you have this life cycle in which you have a conceptual model, design and implementation, right, codification. I think I've been trying to see ontology engineering in light, both doing consultancy, research, and education, in which we should see ontologies at first as conceptual models, and the policy criteria there will be, truthfulness to reality, pragmatic efficiency, how well they support problem-solving in the domain, communication, the domain, and so on. Once we have this conceptual model, then we can generate several different codifications or implementations from the same conceptual model in different language, in different paradigms, and following different trade-offs in design criteria. So the discussion on the representation language, in my opinion, is placed in this codification phase and should follow some design criteria. Right? So in the conceptual level, I think we should indeed have things like analysis techniques like ontoplaning, but also engineering techniques. Ontoplaning focuses on taxonomical relations, but also engineering conceptual modeling techniques that focuses on particle relations, on different types of dependent relations and so on. And something which I think is missing in the design level is both design patterns, design patterns also for conceptual modeling, but also design patterns for mapping conceptual models to specific codification paradigms. And what I would like to see is, in the same way you have in software engineering, in a design level, you're reasoning with, for example, different software architectures. We should have explicitly defined rationale to reason with different paradigms in certification as well for ontology. So, understanding what are the implications of open world versus closed world assumptions, unique name assumptions, and things along those lines. So that's pretty much it. I would like to see the discussion also reflecting the difference in criteria, quality criteria, language, methods for both the conceptual level, the certification level, and for the design transition phase in between. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah, definitely a great point. I think you're right. Should have used the phrase ontology life cycle there to kind of combine a lot of the design methodologies and analysis ideas. So, yeah, we'll definitely start with that. Peter.
Thank you, Michael. I actually only want to make some logistic remarks since both Michael and Leo were soliciting input, I wanted to explain, because we still have a few people who are new to this activity to explain that there are essentially about four different ways to provide input, and we definitely value the input from the entire community before we can get good results that we can bring to the face-to-face in March. So the four ways to provide input is, one, of course, is to join these virtual panels and talk about them, either verbally or type them into the chat session. Typing them into the chat session is good because it gets captured and it becomes part of the proceedings. The second and, I guess, most effective way, because it's asynchronous, is to be submit your input by posting to the Ontology Summit mailing list. I try my best to include everyone who has indicated interest onto that list, but in case you are not on the list, you would be able to find out how to join the mailing list from the Ontology Summit 2010 homepage, or drop me a note anytime. We are already subdivided into tracks, so people should try to prefix their posting so that we know that it's about content, or it's about requirements, or it's about quality. That helps the track champions to more easily synthesize your input. The third way is to do it through the wiki, and again, under the resources section in today's session page, you can already see that there are pages that are marked community input, and there are also pages that are marked synthesis, which essentially are maintained by the track champions. So, of course, as part of the community, try to submit your input through the community input wiki pages. And lastly, but also extremely important, is for us to capture some structured input through the surveys. As most of you would have seen, Arturo Sanchez and Anthony Galton has already sent out our first of three sets of surveys. Two more will be coming out. So I just wanted to clarify on how inputs could be generated and most effectively channeled. So thank you. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. there was kind of one peculiar thing I was kind of thought. So today's discussion is a little top-down in the sense that we're trying to capture this whole range of topics that would be, you know, covered. Just kind of thinking a priori. But a very important aspect is the more bottom-up approach, where everyone in the community who is teaching ontology-related material, whether in an entire course or as a component of a course. So Arturo and Anthony have put together some excellent surveys in order to kind of extract that those concepts. And so, yeah, definitely encourage everyone. I think it will be released this weekend, if they haven't already been released, so that people can input it that way. So that becomes a more bottom-up approach. So we can see, like, what are people doing? And that might help us get more, better ideas on how to organize the material in today's notes in a more effective pedagogical way. Okay, Michael, you're up. Student education. Star 3.
Hello?
Hey.
Okay, great.
We lost you. That's weird. Michael?
Hello? Can you hear me now?
You're back. Yeah, you're back.
I don't know what happened. Right, a couple of things. I wanted to just say on the point of uses or applications for ontologies, Rob Jasper and I wrote a paper several years ago, and I've put a PDF link to it on the chat. I also wanted to comment on the proposal by Chris Mendrell, his analogy that we should view this training as analogous to learning calculus for engineers. I actually complained that I thought there's too much and people don't need to know all that, but Chris makes a very good point, and so I'm going to agree with that. But we're going to train ontologists to be, you know, like formal career ontologists, then I guess they really should have that broad awareness of a wide variety of topics, even if they're not going to use every one in each, you know, working day. And third point, related to Leo's comment that epistemology is important, I also think that there probably should be a certain module on semiotics, the distinction between types, tokens, and meanings. It kind of comes along with formal logic and semantics and such, but it's something that might be noted.
Okay. So what were your thoughts, though, on the ontology applications, kind of how it cuts across the domains?
It does cut across domains, and again, in that paper, we identified, you know, things like search. In fact, you and I, Michael, way back when, identified different categories of where ontologies are applied. So yeah, it definitely does cut across different domains. You can use ontologies for search in any different domain. You can use ontologies for, you know, helping to specify software in any different domain. So I think it's a correct thing to do. Applications is a separate dimension from uses. It's kind of like use cases or maybe a broader level up. You know, how do you use an ontology in an overall system?
Right. Yeah, and then again, this kind of raises the pedagogical issues. So this is a list of topics, but I think equally important would be how are these topics presented? And so, I'm not sure that's something that we would kind of have as a deliverable for this summit, but maybe that's something that every instructor does on their own, but, you know, whether ontology case studies, you know, uses of ontologies is an actual topic, or whether that's simply the methodology by which people are presented with ontologies or discuss or examine, evaluate ontologies is with those case studies in mind is kind of a question. So I'm not sure how that would actually get reflected in the list of topics.
I think that it would be in a class, you might have case studies, you could have a module, you know, a three-week module, which is like intensively studied case studies. So I think the relations maybe end up being one of these things that has immense social impact. So you're already talking about good relations a little bit. So maybe there's a class that picks apart that ontology and says, okay, look, here's a good example of where they used competency questions throughout. I mean, Martin did a very, very good job of that. And he also struggled with living within the confines of OBL. He made a choice to do that, whether he should have or not have opened the question. But that's what he did. And he had all kinds of, you know, jumping through hoops and standing on his head, as one does, when you try to force something into a narrow language. So they're called workarounds. And this is a perfect example of someone who's doing something that's, he's actually an academic, but he's actually built something that's starting to get some real traction.
Right.
So, something like that.
But I think, like, an interesting point is, again, not just the content, which is, I guess, what today's topic is about content, but it's also, again, the delivery. So what you just mentioned is using a particular ontology, but using it in a way that elucidates all these different kinds of ontological methodologies, techniques, distinctions, right? So that's kind of how the student learns, is from all of those aspects. So that's something that's kind of, I think, missing because we're talking strictly about content. So I'm not sure how that's going to be captured in the ultimate summit document. But I think that's something that's really important to keep in mind.
Yeah, and actually, I strayed from what I really wanted to say. My comment about good relations was more on the ontology engineering thing and away from the use thing. But you should also be studying, you know, what exactly happened at, you know, at Best Buy. You know, there's this. The SEO ratings went way up, and that was just one isolated case. But how it's actually being used and what value it adds, I think those are the things that should be included in a module.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, maybe a separate topic called, like, ontology deployment, right? Which is once you have the ontology, and now you have to be concerned about potential applications, which will set in the requirements, obviously. But now you have to worry about actually staging that to your user community and maybe multiple user communities. We found, for example, at VerticalNet that we were basically in electronic commerce, B2B, business to business, but we had so many applications that wanted to use the same ontology. For example, catalogs, manufacturers and distributors, but also, you know, guides for buyers, you know, options, requests for proposals, many applications, including like a trading hub. But to make it, you know, that's really focused enterprise level with many, many applications that use, you know, relatively the same core ontology. And so deployment itself is a very complicated process.
Yeah, maybe the ontology lifecycle, there could be a module that kind of talks about the ontology lifecycle in broadening what Leo said, the deployment, but it goes right back to the competency question. So Best Buy now deploys the Good Relations ontology, and they're increasing their SEO ratings. And so you might want to have a module that really looks at the whole life cycle, the architectural piece. Where in the architecture of the end software is the ontology going to go? What services does the ontology provide? You know, that kind of thing. So that could be where it turns up in the content, sort of like the life cycle, deployment, design, how all that ties together.
Yeah, good point.
That's all for me.
Okay. For pizza. Star 3.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Pavita, and in the past we've spoken about UML in regards to ontologies, and I was wondering about the Straumann here, the set of tools that, you know, is this going to pretty much comprise the list of knowledge representation languages, you know, the other kind of representation modeling languages. Is that going to be considered at all? Is this going to be a standard eventually?
Which would be a standard, sorry?
The list of knowledge representation languages, RDF, OWL, and...
So these were kind of, I guess these were selected from the context of, I suppose, standards work either within ISO or the WPC over the past 5 years. I guess the point being that there are other languages that people are using to build ontologies that are kind of outside of this list. This is not, you know, again, this is not meant to be a complete list. Other approaches can be incorporated into this.
My question is, for example, UML, is that belongs to a slightly different kind of thinking versus this list of tools that we're talking about. Do we want, and are you open to consider those, or do you want to keep this separate?
We're open to including additional languages, like the categorization of language, which is something, you know, again, we could have additional discussions for. One of the other sort of trying to be a criteria here was that each of the knowledge representation languages did correspond to one of the existing ontologies, so that... That was kind of one. So the idea being that these are languages that people are actually using to specify real ontologies that are being used. So, if we wanted to add just a slight criterion here for inclusion would be being able to point to ontologies that people have built using that particular language. That can be something, again, for discussion. I want to be kind of as open as possible today.
Thank you.
And just to chime in here a bit what Michael said, but it's also possible that you want to focus on languages that have a kind of a logic behind them, right? Depending upon, again, I don't want to get into a discussion about what an ontology is, but the usual notion of a logical theory as an ontology, there's a distinction between that and, let's say, a conceptual model is maybe that the language has a logic behind it. UML, for example, is moving in that direction and has more of a formal semantics than it used to, but it's not complete yet.
Okay, thank you. Are you saying that UML is inconsistent with...
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the languages we have right now really have at least a formal logic behind them. And UML has a partial, it's partially formalized.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Pedro. Aldo, you made it.
Star 3.
Star 3, Aldo. Unmute.
Aldo? Still there?
Hi, Peter. This is Peter. I'm joining just on the phone, so I won't show up on the list.
Who was that again?
If we can't get hold of Aldo.
Aldo, press the star 3 button.
Don't
unmute yourself.
Okay, he's there. I'm just trying to unmute.
Can anyone hear me? This is Michael Lynn.
Yes.
Okay. Great. While you're waiting to get Aldo on the line, can I just make one comment about the use of other languages without formalism?
Sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, one thing that, I mean, I teach a course at UC Davis, and we call it knowledge management, and it essentially takes a user through concept maps to topic maps to relational databases to UML, then to frame-based ontologies, then to OWL ontologies, just so that they can see the strengths and weaknesses of each knowledge management, whether it has formalism or not, so that they can see the value of each. And I have found that to be extremely important to get them to understand the value of ontology and to also know how, in the real world, that the tools that they're going to be working with at an enterprise modeling level can work with ontology through, for instance, the ODM specification from OMG for going from UML to OWL. And I just throw that in.
Yeah, definitely. And I had mentioned it earlier in the overview of the notes that a lot of this idea of the ontology spectrum from informal to formal is kind of is sort of reflected in at least some of the listing of existing ontologies. I guess the question was whether or not these were parts of kind of the case studies for what people are using as ontologies versus what are some of the actual languages that people are using to specify ontologies. So, we definitely have more discussion on those languages.
Peter, Aldo can't unmute. Apparently, do you think Skype is the problem? Maybe Peter.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, maybe in the meantime, why don't we just move on to Todd.
Okay.
And if, when Aldo gets, if you ever get unmuted, just jump right in. Todd, go ahead.
Michael, Leo?
Yes.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you for putting together that list. I do like that list of subjects, and trying to get that all into an undergraduate curriculum is going to be a huge challenge. However, one thing that I am still confused about in the discussion that I've been hearing today previously is the intent of having such a curriculum. I think I put a similar comment up in the chat. What do we expect a person going through this training to be able to do when they come out?
Mm. No, that's a good question, and that might have been a better way to kind of approach this whole thing.
Over-engineering today, and I believe the metaphor of training for electrical engineering or other types of engineering position for physics or chemistry, where you have this grounding in a range of subjects, all of which are related in some fashion, so perhaps tendrously at some point to the end goal, is important. Because sometimes you never know when you're going to have to come back and, you know, even electrical engineers have these great things sometimes. They don't have mathematics sitting around. So the question, or the confusion I have in my mind is I'm hearing several possible results out of this training. The majority, of course, being that of engineering and using the work product of the person trained in this fashion to run a system, develop a system or something, as opposed to just intellectual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to have a little discussion on that, and that might help clarify some of the items that need to be put in.
Right.
One of the things I don't see in here, but I believe maybe Leo mentioned something about it, and certainly related to the semiotics, is linguistics.
Right.
And if you want to stretch even further, you can bring in sociology too, but that might be overkill. I think that's all I have to say.
Oh, that's kind of funny because I interpreted what you said in a slightly different way. I kind of
natural language.
Yeah. No, I kind of interpreted what you said as there's maybe perhaps an overemphasis on concept on this list as opposed to skill.
Again, it would get down to what you expect the person to do once they have this training.
Right, but that's what I mean. If we're kind of emphasizing here the concepts, but if you're actually thinking, okay, well, you know, what are these ontologists supposed to be doing? And that's kind of like, it's not just what they know, but it's also the skills they have. And maybe that needs to be emphasized more.
Okay, so if you look at some of the computer science curriculum, which I would not hold up as a model, beat me up in the parking lot about that, they focus on particular languages, and then they have projects using those particular languages. And that part is good in terms of developing a skill. However, given the domain that an ontologist or a person going through training may be engaged in, maybe it's a larger world problem.
Right.
And unfortunately, many of the computer science programs that I've looked at, even in very good schools, fail to include some basic science information. Like, they don't require enough science courses. I think that would appeal to Barry offline. So, I mean, this is a big ugly subject because, for the most part, it goes across so many disciplines. But I think it could help the whole discussion if we come to some consensus as to what we expect the person to do if they had this training.
Right.
Is it just a training to continue on to graduate school and do really interesting things from an intellectual perspective? Or to go out and start building stuff? Or go out and help just design stuff? Or what? There could be multiple avenues after some of those things change. But I think we should be a little more clear about that.
Right. Yeah, and actually this probably will be maybe emphasized in some of the later panels. Because it does come up, for example, at least here at the university, in the universities in Canada, the Canadian Engineering Accreditation Board goes through and, you know, at regular, I don't know how many year intervals, you know, reviews every engineering program, you know, in the country, to kind of make sure that, you know, it's kind of meet, it's delivering what it's supposed to deliver. So at some point we'll probably be looking at, you know, what kinds of, what the methodology that those kinds of boards use, to kind of give an overall, curriculum constraint, you know, to, in order to evaluate whether or not curriculum is kind of meeting its objectives. But that might be another way of looking at this, is what are the objectives of this curriculum, as opposed to
yeah.
just simply what's the content.
Right. Oh, and as to your suggestion that each of these possible topics should have a little abstract next to them,
mm-hmm.
one of part of that abstract may include its relation to the other parts and also its relation to the end goal.
Right. Good point.
Okay, thank you, Michael.
Great point there.
Yeah, and one way to view this is that, you know, once we're thinking about developing a curricula, this may actually be some sort of dependency tree, that shows the interrelated parts, the rough order that they should be addressed. Right? It's not present right now.
Exactly. Oh, and by the way, I asked Barry back in October to develop an ontology for this, training of ontology. that would help, right? And it would it sort of get to what Leo's just talking about.
Okay, so we'll see if anyone's going to volunteer for that one.
They'd have to be certified first.
Well, that's true. Yeah, we had a cat 22 now.
I think Barry would consider himself certified.
Yeah. Well, many of us are certifiable.
Is this the real chicken versus the egghead?
Yeah. Robbie, you're up next.
Oh, Michael, I've unmuted everyone. Let's try to see if we can catch Aldo. Robbie.
Oh, okay.
Aldo?
Yes?
Okay, yeah, we can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes,
thanks,
go ahead,
sorry go. For this complication. I just wanted to say two things, because too many would be deserved. So the first one is actually that the Strowman doesn't relate very much to the topic of the of this panel, because it's about the landscape in which ontologies are designed, being collaborated, and reasoned about, and so on. While the panel theme is about how ontologies could be able to do what they do. And frankly, the answer is the obvious answer that comes to my mind is that it's like any other expert that is working in any field. So what is the typical ability of expertise in cognitive terms? Because we are talking about the mind of a certain person. And expertise is the ability to cut a section of the reality. And this cutting is made by means of some schemata. Yes, are able to give you some to cut the reality, and also to give some expectations to the person that is trying to understand what happens, and to give some projections to the in order to solve this problem. This is true from problem solving in general in any kind of field. So either you are the driver or president of some republic, or you are an ontologist. And what is special in ontology? The ability of that to abstract from some problem to input while enclose some application or real world change requirements. So it's really easy to guess what is important that is coming from requirements from some local domain experts, for example, or application tasks, and try to distill what are the basic schemata that then can be used to describe or to solve the problem. And this is made, of course, mainly at the level of modeling concepts. But this does not imply that then you are stuck into some specific formal language. For example, what would I say is that in the past, without this ontology being formal, you were able to abstract from the problem input and being able to devise solutions, devise mutable solutions, is something that lots of people is doing from the origin of humankind, possibly. So what I hear is that we are trying to explicit this ability in a way that the products of this ability are put in a way that could then be used by a system or computer to do the same or to do similar things, but it's a process of doing that. So essentially, what I say, let's be close to this idea. So that's why I always admit, sorry for using my own doctor, is I worked within the last year on knowledge patterns, and I think this is very well related to this idea of what is in the Bible and ontology. So, especially a good ontology in this case, ontology is able to manage these knowledge patterns, which are made of different things, it's not just a formal model. We are able to control some subsets of the vocabulary, to associate this vocabulary with certain properties to formalize can really help, and also using some inferential structure that can be supportive of not by procedures, the inferential automatic inferences. And then this turns out to be something that has been explored heavily in cognitive science. For example, again, it is the national schema that, although comes back to Fritz Lucan, was anyway really singled out in the 20th century, starting from Butler and then coming to Neisser, Rumelas, and a few more on the music side. And I think recently what we are trying to do, for example, with Peter Clark, created the emotional knowledge pattern, and more recently other kinds of ontology patterns, is something that lives directly to put together this original ability of solving small-sized focus problems in terms of formal complex. Okay. So essentially this is the real effort I want to convey. So I'm using everyone for me.
No, thanks for those comments. I think maybe it does kind of also connect with some of the earlier points that were made, particularly with emphasizing the ontology life cycle as a main component. And so as Michael Oshholt said, including the ideas of complex questions is one technique, and as you're saying, design patterns is another technique. So to kind of be a little more explicit on which techniques are used at different stages of the ontology life cycle, I think that's something that we need to elaborate on.
I would say, by the way, that you can developers of these knowledge patterns see them as closely related to complexity.
Right.
These are just, in a sense, the other things of the calling. So you have a problem, you can express it in complexity, and you have associated some modeling concept that is proved to be able to solve, to answer those complex questions. So there is something in, so your original methodology and complexity is essentially a component of what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah, and then also just to kind of reiterate the idea of ontology skills versus ontology concepts, that it's very often you have, even in a software course, software analysis and design, there'll be a project that the students have to do. And so a lot of the things they learn are kind of learned in the context of the project, even if some of that's not taught explicitly in lecture. It's kind of things they have to learn in order to get the project done. So there's those kind of informal aspects as well that are kind of covered here. So sorry, Robbie, you've been waiting patiently. You're on.
I think Amanda wants to receive me. I gave her that option. So go ahead, Amanda, and then I'll be there.
Well, at, actually, Ravi, go ahead. I've taken my hand down.
Oh, okay. So my points are more observational now. I have had some inputs by typing them into the dashboard, which I hope some of you would kindly address. They were addressed to some people specifically, and others are general. So one of the topics that we definitely, one of the realizations we all had was that it's not very easy, containable, and short-lived. The comment definitely provided us areas for input and editing. I did not see many deletions. So that begs one more question, that we need decision support mechanism built into our suggested curriculum, whether they are formal undergraduate, graduate, or PhD level courses or training. And another thing that factored into all this was that the people who knew ontology would definitely contribute more as ontology domain experts to help develop other domains of training and ontology. The third observation is then we need to have a list of those branch out points to the decision support system and also relate to some value that a particular domain or area of adoption such as IT or technology or ontology or Pascal language in a curriculum would help a person achieve this desirable answer.
Right, and hopefully this will be addressed in kind of future panels. And again, there's two kind of in particular. Well, one will be the questionnaire that Arturo and Anthony are providing to kind of to gather, you know, what are people currently teaching in their courses. And the other one will be the panel where we actually start to say, as you were suggesting, you know, which of these belong to an undergraduate course, how would these be packaged for a one-week professional course, how would this be done at a graduate level, you know, say for a kind of professional master's sort of degree. So the dividing these up into whether people call them modules or programs or whatever terminology, I think that's the focus for one of the other panels. Supposed to be February, I'm not sure when. Okay, Amanda?
Great. Thanks. Now I'm really glad that Ravi went first because I have more interesting things to say. Earlier, particularly on Todd's point, I was being a little puzzled because there was a continued reference to this training and my understanding was that there was no this training that was the subject of this particular discussion, so that it would be a big bucket out of which many this trainings could be made.
Right. Right.
And I tried to say that on the chat, but I don't think I was clear about it. Okay, so I'm glad to hear you say right. But Ravi's suggestion of sort of, you know, thing that gets into the decision support for it helps clarify how that could be useful, right? It can be more useful to have this big bunch of buckets if we also produce some beginning of an account of what the different buckets might be useful for or in what context. I wanted to add to a list of places that just might come up the requirements survey coming soon may also help us get, I might tweak a little bit some of the questions, but it might help us get a little bit of a start on that because in addition to asking, you know, what skills are needed or used by ontologists currently, there are also questions about the context in which this is being answered. But we might look for a way to do a survey so that we can gather those correlations. Right? These different pieces are being marked as important by people working in this kind of application or this domain or people looking for psychologists with certain level of experience.
Okay, yeah, maybe Arturo could address that. Arturo, to what extent then would we want to tie together these rough notes with the forthcoming surveys?
Well, the requirement survey is not part of Arturo. It's just a...
Okay. Sorry. You're talking about the program module requirement. Right. I'm sorry.
Right. So Arturo survey is focused on curriculum and training as in various ways as is this session. And the requirement track is on, it's taking the point of view of field of battle, you can tell which domain I'm working in. the perspective of the working ontologists and people who employ, manage, or need them, and asking what do these folks need to be able to do? What do you need people to be able to do? What are the important skills you're looking for? And so
okay, so that'll be your questionnaire or survey that you're sending out then. Amanda, so that'll be your survey?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so how will you kind of explicitly incorporate some of these ideas, or how do you want people to kind of reflect on that?
In earlier, a couple of sessions ago, I think at the launch, we had sort of the open thing, and I incorporated a lot of the feedback from that into the draft of the questions that I have now. But as we started going today, it became very clear to me that actually I should take some of this feedback that's coming in today and do their up very rapid, because I really do need to work on getting it out. But incorporate more of the feedback into there, because there are more suggestions of areas that are important for people today that didn't come up then.
Right. We get that from the
best. And I just want to say that behind our discussion here, in general, there's this model that we're more or less not stating, which is more of a pedagogical model. In other words, we talked about this earlier, a set of competencies, and then, knowledge, skill, criteria to gauge whether you've acquired that knowledge and skill, and then, the objectives really point to, how the competency is to be used. So, there's this model that's more general than just ontology, which we can probably use and maybe even make clearer.
Okay.
Jim Disbro?
Yes, hello. I wanted to follow up on a couple of comments that were made earlier. One was dealing with the linguistics being missing from the discussion, and that it appears that most of the ontology referenced are basically noun-oriented, and in linguistics, the verb is actually very important. It's captured in, within OWL, it refers back to RTF, which is actually being included as a triplet. Within topic maps, they're called associations. And I think that these are really important to avoid the dead end that comes from using just the copula to be, as in is or is a, which is so dominant in the English-only ontologies. I would like to try and make sure that we include the relationships component. Now, okay, what is a relationship? Well, someone is doing something or to someone or to something. And this is a noun predicate object relationship. But in each of those cases, there is a a noun on both ends, but there's a predicate in the middle. And you know, this operator, I prefer to think of it in terms of mathematical operations and then subset it into predicates and verbs. But this whole notion of including the associations or relationships is really important to teach the students so that they can understand that there are functionalities that occur between each of these. For example, a doctor operates on patients. Okay, you have a relator at the beginning, you have the relationship in the middle of the functionality and the object on which it's operating. But anyway, when you're talking linguistics, everybody who's listening knows what verbs, infinitives are, what gerunds are, but does everybody know what a copula is? English is a copula-bound language. It's the most copula-bound language of all of them. And other languages don't even have a copula. And if you rip out the copula, it's the part that connects the subject to the object. It's the verb. If you rip out the primary copula in English, which is the verb to be, and remove all those things that have to do with is, was, were, will be, being, as in concepts of being, as in what is a human being. If you just rip all these out and you say, well, how can we now function in English without that? Well, the answer is if you have these relationships or associations that are built into some of these international standards that we don't see popping up in English-only versions.
Well, yeah, so I think some of these points, again, need to be elaborated in the notes. They were, I think, very kind of alluded to some of them as well. Some of these, kind of the fundamental ontological distinctions that everyone needs to be aware of and understand in order to actually build and evaluate ontology. So he was using, incidents and subclass, and you're kind of focusing more on the relations. Yeah, I think all of these would have to be put there. So that kind of, like, so that a lot of these bullets need to be elaborated with a little mini paragraph abstract or whatever to kind of list the set of topics that would be included under this. But I think that's kind of where we would want them.
Yeah, if you look around the world at the ontologies that have been built, typically with intellectual property inside of a corporation, where they don't show anybody how they actually do it, but when you burrow into them, like there's there's one particular German medical ontology where they are using these relationships, and they've got a very successful ontology. But it's behind economic barriers, intellectual property barriers. And if we're to bring these out into the public domain so that people can see the functionality of how these actually are good and work, it means going beyond the constraints of the English language. For example, English does not allow a reflexive verb. You take the verb accelerate. Well, if a person is accelerating the car, it's a reflexive because the person himself is being accelerated. We can't express that well in English. As opposed to a linear accelerator accelerates a proton, where there is no reflexive component. And that those kinds of distinctions are important when building ontologies. And it's really hard to do this with English only.
Right.
And with the triplet, it doesn't allow the reflexivity. And however, in the topic map, a way of creating associations, it is allowed.
Jim, this is Leo. I mean, I agree with you. I kind of collapsed linguistics under formal semantics that would highlight not just the word and phrase distinctions, but the underlying meaning distinctions and how to analyze those within language. So, your point's well taken, and it is the case that other languages bring out different portions of this logical space that we're dealing with, and we want to make sure that we include that and some of the knowledge that's coming from that.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. I know I've talked with other people who are online that are along these lines also, Ravi and Pavitra, for example. I'm sure would be able to discuss this better than I. But it just to make sure that it's not dropped out of the discussion and it remains a major functionality within any ontology. I'm happy with that.
I think, Jim, you made a very good point, but from an implementation point of view, the subject object and the relationship there for RDS, the particular scenario that you discussed, you can capture that information to a certain extent, not to a great extent. But that's a good point, I think. This is Pavitra. Hi.
Yes, hi. Yes, thank you, Pavitra.
Okay, so we're getting close to 3:30, the kind of the formal end of today's session. See, Ravi, did you have your hand up? Did you have another point?
Just a quick one. For one, to thank Jim for his expanding and including from our rich European and also some Eastern knowledge bases, the notions that are so fundamental to ontology from other linguistic and other cultural backgrounds. We should give it some emphasis. And I also came to know as a result that copula means something other than in multivariate statistics. It means something else in English language. Thanks. The second point is that the decision support systems I had in mind for Amanda to consider in her work would be things like case-based reasoning. Would be one approach, and the other one would be to look at the tools available for decision support commission. So, using those concepts, we could guide the prospective students or learners like myself to the right type of combination of courses for our product.
Yeah, good point. So, I think we have everyone's comments in the queue. So I'd like to thank everyone, the panel, as well as everyone else contributing both on the phone and in the chat room. It's going to take a while to digest the chat room comments. Sorry, I'm too old to multitask too much, so I wasn't able to respond to the chat. But I will try to get to some of those and address them in some emails, as Peter mentioned. The different ways in which people can contribute to the final deliverable at the face-to-face meeting at NIST on March 15th. I just like to encourage everyone, again, this is just the starting point, and so I hope everyone kind of contributes, adds more points, and continues on the discussion. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.